is we can use that boat, that vessel, for wintertime support. Right now, if you want to come from Haines to Juneau, you got 2 days a week you can get on a ferry. That's it. Because the Malaspina is laid up. We don't run it. The capacity is too big. In running a fast ferry, we can run that vessel in the winter however many times we need to. We can run it 5 days a week if we want to. The operating costs are so much less that we can really provide the additional service that we think we need. So with this fast ferry going into that route is a temporary measure until you solve the total problem, which ultimately someday would probably be, in DOT's opinion, the construction of a road.
It would seem, however, Commissioner, if you, once you start down the road of fast ferries and you make this $70 million initial commitment followed by more commitments, I'm certain, that by the time you finish buying all your fast ferries, you could have built a road.
Representative Mulder, only one of these boats, 35 mil, will go on that route. One is going Sitka, Juneau. One is going Wrangell, Petersburg. And then this one, which is going to be running Juneau, Skagway, again, can be used other places when the road's built. And I don't think you would ever add fast ferries. We wouldn't want two of these at a time running. I mean, if you ever went to a ferry option, you're going to buy the bigger ferry. So I don't see that that this is a real problem, because those other two are totally committed in other places on the Southeast plan. Again, when we finish that Prince William Sound plan, I think you're going to see our recommendation of doing some things. For instance, the most expensive boat we got, the oldest boat we got, is the Bartlett. And it's the one that costs us some of the most money to run. So there's going to be a requirement up there. And if you do build a road, we just pull them and put them in other runs.
Mr. Commissioner, wouldn't it seem beneficial or cost-efficient to try and try one fast ferry? I mean, you've got one purchased, even though it's been, that was reappropriated and X'd out, and somehow I have a feeling that the stake wasn't driven through the heart of that beast yet. seeing as Representative Grusendorf didn't fight too hard to protect it here, I think he probably had additional backup somewhere. Wouldn't it seem cost-efficient to try one, see if it works? I mean, you've heard the same things that we've heard. You've got to reconfigure docks. You've got many of the places that you cannot operate at high speed at all. Most of the water's through here. Thus, you're not saving a whole lot of the time, but you're diminishing capacity. You've got to be sensitive to those same things, I would think. Wouldn't it seem to make sense to start with one, see if it makes any sense at all?
Representative Mulder, I would if these were new state-of-the-art type of things. They're basically not. Now, there's been some problems with them. Let me talk about the state of Washington. The state of Washington ran the thing. They're running it on a very short route. But they just won their environmental suit, and the environmental suit was that you're creating waves and washing away this one particular beach. They just won that. Their fast ferries are back operational, and they're going to run them. Now, they're different than what we have because, again, they're basically passenger. Now, then there was a lot of discussion about the BC fast ferries. Well, the BC fast ferries, to give you an example, were designed and constructed by the BC ferry outfit. And that would be the same as if we had the Alaska Marine Highway System design them and build them themselves. They built them under a cost-plus basis. They also built them for a secondary reason of creating a new industry in British Columbia. Their costs went completely out of line. The design, in our opinion, was not at all good. They were running these things on a very short haul. And to use one of these vessels, you've got to have 50, 60, 70 miles to run it in, or you don't obtain any benefit on it. So I don't think that we can really compare them to those two, and they've been using them in Scandinavia and Australia and all of this. We just haven't been using them very much in the U.S. I think the design's there. And Captain Dahl, would you like to expand on that? Ben, you popped up here?
I'm Bob Dahl, Southeast Region Director. I wouldn't expand very much on what the commissioner said because he made the points very well. The value to high speed is long distance. And the shorter the distances become, the less is the value. When BC Ferries puts that very expensive catamaran on a route that's only 25 miles long, the value to the passengers is marginal. And to the corporation, when they begin to look for cost-cutting measures, they eliminate the marginal operations. In the case of Southeast Alaska, we're dealing with large distances. It's 132 nautical miles from Sitka to Juneau. There's only one way to overcome that time and distance problem that distance provides us, and that's with speed. In addition to that, the Southeast plan calls for these segments to be put into place inevitably over some time. The shorter time frame in which we can put those segments into place, the sooner the residents of Southeast and all visitors to Alaska will realize the benefit of it. If we have to string out the portions of that Southeast plan over a long period of time, it's going to be very awkward having to do that.
Go ahead and then
I'll conclude. Yeah, I guess the point that I'm making is one that I have to concur with Senator Torgerson. The only reason I could see going forward is that you have improved service at less cost, and I'm not sure you're going to get that with the high-speed ferry.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, for Representative Mulder, we've made a comparison of the cost of operating the high-speed ferry that we have in mind and the Malaspina in the Lynn Canal. And we use that example because it's one that everyone is familiar with. On that route, for a one-day complete cycle of operations, the high-speed ferry would burn fuel worth $2,500. The Malaspina burns $2,000 worth. So that difference does exist. But in that same period of time, the crew costs for operating that ship are $9,000 for the high-speed ferry and $26,000. That's the difference that those crew costs produce. The technology that's available to us with a high-speed ferry not only allows us to get our passengers where they want to go in the most convenient manner that they can get there, but it also reduces the cost of operating the marine highway system. And the reason that Senator Torgerson is convinced by that is because he sees the dollar savings that can result.
I don't think he's convinced. I think he sees just the opposite, because I'm not sure which ferries, Captain Dahl, are you going to be taking offline? Which big ferries are you taking offline permanently?
The figures that we presented to the Senator reflected the large ferries, the current mainliners, operating in the summertime when they have loads that will earn the kind of money that they do now in the summer, but avoids having to operate them in the wintertime when they cannot earn enough money to pay for their own way. The figures that we gave the Senator reflected that, and I would be happy to provide those to the committee, of course.
Well, which vessels are you going to take offline if you bring these on?
The most likely one would be the Bartlett, probably about the summer of 2002-2003. We would probably substitute for the Bartlett the Aurora. The IFA will take over that route down at the south end of the system. The other ships, we have projected them out for about a 10-year period. Those that are most questionable have to do with routes that the Fast Ferry is also covering. If the Fast Ferry is operating around the year-round, we would have the mainliners operating only in the summertime. The costs that we show and the revenue that they can earn show that that's a profit-positive route. To take them off the line would lose the revenue that those would produce.
Captain Dahl, will you guarantee me that the operating expenses for the marine highway for the fiscal year that these are put in will go down from where they're currently at? Guaranteed.
Perhaps not for the first year that they are in operation, but in subsequent years, yes, sir.
The overall operating budget, we can cut or reduce?
Well, the overall operating budget may not be reduced, but the revenue earned and therefore the amount of public support that the system needs would be reduced.
That's what I'm saying. The subsidy reduced.
Yes, sir.
Subsidy reduced.
Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be brief here, but Representative Mulder asked the question here about the Fast Ferries program. Does the community support it? And the question is yes. They support it. And then the discussion went into the road out of Juneau, that Juneau, of course, would like a road. But then when you ask that question, do the communities support it? At the other end of the road have to be two communities that are not too extremely excited about the road. And so that's a problem that we have to deal with. And the fast ferry system is not just for Juneau. It's for the outlying communities. And when, in many cases, when you're talking about services, oftentimes you'll be picking up other communities as well in this service. It's not just the towns that are mentioned. Other than the one from Sitka, will probably go directly to Juneau, and perhaps on occasions duck over to Angoon. I don't know, there might be. But then you have got Cake, and you've got all these communities out there. So it's a whole system. It's not just Wrangell, it's not just Sitka, it's not just Juneau. It's all the communities that are in there that will get service.
Hey, Representative Bundy.
I'm just curious about, and I know I'm asking hypotheticals and protection, but if you take one of the big boats off and put it in warm storage, I guess is what you'd about to call it, and then what about the crew? I suspect they'd like to be in warm storage too.
Through the chair for Representative Bundy, the crew does represent a challenge, if you will. We must have, for ships operating on the routes we follow through some challenging navigational obstacles, we must have very competent ship operators. And we need to hold on to those folks in the wintertime when they're laying over. We have begun discussions with the unions involved. They are all supportive. I would emphasize that. All of the unions have expressed their support to this general effort. I have little doubt that they will do their best to develop work rules and overtime rules and things of that sort that will be to their maximum advantage, but we will not realize the benefits of this operating system unless we, in fact, do not have to employ all of them all year long. But we do need to attract them back again every spring, and that will be a challenge for the operators of the Marine Highway System.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Senator Osterman.
Well, I don't have a question, but I have a comment. As we go through the process of figuring out what the state of the last is going to look like in the long term, these are the exact kind of discussions we need to continue to have as to where new roads are going to be, or where new ferries are going to be, or what our educational system is going to look like. And investing in Alaska is part of the process we go through. You can't look at having a viable state without investing in it. And I think that this is exactly what this is all about. The fact that we can do it in a very short time period using those federal dollars, I think, makes all the sense in the world. I don't know. Did you indicate that it's not your desire to move this out of here today?
No, not today.
I'd like to make a motion.
would you like us to start the music?
Representative Mulder.
Commissioner, I was really interested in the financing element of it as well, paying off the bonds. I was trying to think of how to best explain it. How much lost opportunity are we going to experience in the years where we have to begin paying off those bonds? In other words, the bond payment's going to be about $35 million a year. And my understanding is for about a 15-year cycle, a 15-year maturity. Is
yes,
that
sir.
Correct? So we're going to lose about $35 million worth of opportunity for that 15-year period.
Representative Mulder, I might also explain the way the match is done is the match is paid with the payment. You don't have to come up with $30+ million in match at the beginning of this. You would match the payment, so your match each year would be part of that $35 million.
Could you repeat that one more time, just so I can?
The match, we will not pay a lump sum match for $350 million. Right. We will pay the match. We will be matching the payment we'll make. So our 10% match.
So you save 3.5.
Yes. About 3.5 each year will be a reduction in the match requirement that we would need. And really, you can look at it from that aspect of if you got a $350 million program, you've already built the projects for about $35 million, but your program then becomes $315 million. You've got the match taken care of for that $35 that came off.
And you provide that match with the interest earnings off the account?
Yes, sir. We've calculated it, and we think we'll have more than enough to pay the interest earnings, and that is state money. So we can use it for state match.
Representative Davies?
What's the other, I think the other, these things are always kind of difficult to get your head around, you know, but the other piece of it you have to look at is that if you consider building one of these projects now versus building it in the future, there's a cost of money that's involved in that too. So the net present value of both options is about the same.
I'm not sure about that, Representative Davies, in the sense that doing the rough calculations in my mind, your total payments are going to be looking at somewhere between $500 to $600 million, is that correct? And so on $350 million, so you're losing about somewhere in the range of $250 to $300 million.
If you build those same projects later, they're going to be
right.
more expensive.
Well, that's why you just got to start, you know, you put the inflation value on. You're not far off, but I don't think you're totally right. It's saying they're about the same. There is some loss because you're borrowing money.
The cost of financing is what you're losing.
Mr. Chairman. I actually almost forgot we did have a couple people we rounded back up on the teleconference. I want us to see if they want to weigh in with a couple comments here before we wrap up for the day. First of all, in Anchorage, Mr. Dillon, are you online?
Mr. Chairman, this is Frank Dillon with the Alaska Trucking Association. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead with your comments.
I'm here today on behalf of the Trucking Association to strongly support HB 319. We've looked at this, and to be honest with you, when I first heard about it and the way it's referred to as a Garvey bond, and when the presentation was first made, it sounded a little too good to be true, particularly on the financing side. It was one of those opportunities where it looked to me like if someone came to me on the street with a deal like this, I'd probably turn it down. But doing some research on the matter of the financing itself, I turned to some experts in the fiscal area, bankers, folks that work with the Chamber of Commerce, folks that actually deal in corporate bonds and municipal bonds, and as it turns out, this is a good deal. It's a way to utilize future revenues that are coming into the state. And it's true, there is a certain risk involved in that if the federal government defaults, we probably wouldn't have the money and we might have to figure out another way to pay it off, raising fuel taxes, going to the permanent fund. But I'm afraid at that point we'd have other things that we'd need to consider too, like probably defending ourselves from foreign nations and the rest of it. So we're fairly confident that the payments on the federal side will continue. As we understand the structure here, we're taking on about 10% in terms of debt, which we don't think is unreasonable. But the payoff in all this is we're going to get projects done. And I don't know if you were listening carefully, I'm sure you were. The 1991 long-range transportation plan said we needed to fix the road by Merrill Field. If you go back even prior to that, that was one of those things that needed to be done. The governor, in a message that he gave to the chamber, mentioned that one of his prime priorities was to finish the extension of C Street. Now, all of these projects have a very strong social value to them, and that I believe when this goes out to a vote of the people, you're going to see an overwhelming support for these and going to be able to look back with pride on the fact that this was an innovative way to get the financing done. It was something that produced a tangible result. And yes, we can solve many of our traffic problems in the Anchorage area, in the Fairbanks area, and other areas of the state by adding lanes or increasing capacity. So as a representing a group who pays a lot into what we're talking about for the funding source, and that is the Highway Trust Fund, which is entirely supported by motor fuel taxes, and the match in this state, although it's a general fund appropriation, approximately matches the amount collected in fuel taxes, we think this is a smart thing to do, a timely thing to do, and would hope that you would take this, pass it through and get it out to the people and get underway and start moving materials. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is Mr. Blake Johnson there in Anchorage?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead with your comments.
Yes, I'm Blake Johnson. I'm with the Laborers Union, Local 341. We support this bill also. One of the angles that we look at it that is helpful, looking down the road at projects that are going to be 3-5 years down, it helps us in our apprenticeship program so that we can get more Alaskans on these projects and increase our training capabilities. So that we can look down the road and know we've got projects, we can expand our programs along with all the other unions. And I think it's a prudent way to let the voters have the shot at taking a crack at it. If they want better roads, like we've heard so many times, let's let it pass and go on. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dick Catanaugh?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. On behalf of EGC, I would like to offer some
comments on this. You probably have or should have in your folders copies of our position paper. Our president, Mike Miller, has testified on this issue in the Board of House Transportation. We are in favor of this concept. We think it's a good idea. But I expect you think that coming from the construction industry. But more than the fact that our members will probably build many of these projects, we're in favor of this because it does help some of the problems that we have. You particularly look at Anchorage and Fairbanks. These are needed projects. And it's hard to look citizens in the face and say, well, we didn't really think that problem was that bad when you're trying to get out of town on the weekend and you're sitting in traffic in front of Merrill Field or, you know, traffic on C Street when it hits Diamond and no place to go. These are serious problems. We think that this is a good solution. We think it does it at almost no cost. And I'd like to just suggest to Representative Mulder, in your math, I think you forgot to give credit back in the total cost for the income that's earned on those bonds, which would probably come out to be a push. I think this is a good concept. I'd like to commend Commissioner Perkins for his idea and his foresight on this and pushing it, and like to encourage you all to support this and move it through.
Thank you. Would you make a comment, please, about the portion of your letter that talks about the possibility of overheating the economy? That was one of the things that the committee members did discuss.
Sure. And recognize the word there, possibility. If we go ahead with the missile defense system, if we go ahead with the gas pipeline, if we go ahead with the major increase in airport transfer or airport projects, there is the possibility. And if we go ahead with Anwar, if something moves off the dime there, there's a possibility that we might have an overheated economy. But I can say this in all seriousness, that our members this year and next year have the capability, the capacity to do these projects that are outlined here, and they're not coming on that soon. After that, who knows what's going to happen in this economy.
Okay, well, you say this year and next year. Of course, this can't even go to a vote until November. So this year is out of the question.
Well, what I'm suggesting is that we do have capacity right now to handle this work. And what we're talking about, if you look at the way projects are staggered, we're looking at, I think, the high side, an increase in our highway projects of about 30%. We have more than that capacity in our highway construction contractors right now.
Okay. And then, Commissioner, can you tell me in the regular STIP, are there not enough projects in Southeast to put into this package and take the fast ferries out so that you can still get regional, interest, generate regional interest for the vote, but the issue of the fast ferries versus road is left for further debate and decision?
Mr. Chairman, within the STIP, the three-year STIP, we don't really have that much left to do in Southeast Alaska. We're doing the Ketchikan work, downtown Ketchikan, 3rd Avenue, which was a biggie. We have a 10-year program for Juneau to put interchanges on this, but it's quite a ways out. I don't think it needs to go right now on Egan Drive. So when I looked at it, I did not see anything really in Southeast that was burning critical on congestion and all of this other than the ferry system that's within the STIP.
And then Mr. Catanau, could you just make a few comments about, some members are offended by the inclusion of two high-speed ferries as part of your position paper?
Well, certainly. Recognize that AGC has over 600 members, and there are some of those 600 that shares the feeling that maybe two high-speed ferries might be overkill, that one would certainly be enough, but they all agree they don't know enough about it to make that decision, and they're willing to rely on the Department of Transportation if that's their best guess as to where we should put this money that they would go along with.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just thinking of Southeast and some needs and discussions we've heard at this table, especially from Representative Williams and his bridge project in Ketchikan. But I'm... I don't know what other dreams some people in Southeast might have either.
So on behalf of Representative Williams,
I thought I had to mention that.
The word bridge will be in the public record today.
Commissioner, what about a North Douglas access? That's been an issue that's been...
Representative Mulder, there is already money for a North Douglas access, which was demonstration or earmarked appropriation, and I've forgotten the number, of about $3 million or so. We have made that money available to the city of Juneau. I think they need $3 or $4 million more to go ahead with the project. I'm not sure exactly where it stands, but we're sitting ready to give them money. That's a pretty small project to put in for Southeast. It would only be probably $3 million or so in this program. And I'm not sure. We don't have anything to do with the project. That's totally Juneau's project, other than giving them the money that was earmarked.
Mr. Chairman, Dick, I think when you talked about the investment income off of those bonds, that's probably one-time money, and you're looking at, if I look at the fiscal note right, about $33 million worth of income. So you're right, you have some income money, but it's a one-time shot. It's not over a long period of time. And that's really to what I was referring.
I understand that. I think, though, they have run the numbers. I think it looks probably pretty favorable when you factor in used income and you look at the inflation.
Okay, also we need to see, is Mr. John Whitley or Whitley on Whitley on the teleconference?
Hello?
Yes.
This is John Whitley from American E&S. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead with your comments, please.
Okay, thank you. I'm also the legislative chair of the AGC. I was not able to make it down to the LIO, and I apologize. I didn't know Dick Catnall was there. My comments follow Dick as the AGC supports the concepts of House Bill 319, and I appreciate the opportunity to make comment.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals on the teleconference that wish to make comment on House Bill 319 today? Hearing none, Representative Bundy, question?
Is Mr. Dillon still on teleconference?
Yes, sir.
I was just wondering your questions about meeting someone in the street. If you met the average college professor, would you buy a deal like this from him?
Through the chair, Representative Bundy. Yes, I would.
Your judgment is still strong.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dick Catnall, this is Gary Davis. Do you know what the annual increase in gravel has been coming out of Palmer in the last couple of years? A lot of material in these projects in Anchorage, and even that's probably a big item over the years if we're looking 5 years down the road as opposed to 10 or 15.
I'm sorry, I don't have that number. I apologize.
Yeah, that's fine. That isn't probably even above the inflation cost or increases inflation over the years. That's going to be a major item.
And you realize, Representative Davis, if even though it's like Anchorage project, if we're buying gravel from the MATSU, that's more governmental money into the MATSU. We know how they feel about that. Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As private,
could you leave MATSU in a hole?
You didn't say that soft enough. They could hear it on telecom. That's Representative Rosengarten.
Commissioner? Representative Terrio, I can't pass this. I think it's an Anchorage firm that owns a gravel pit, though.
Captain Dahl, do the current contracts for the IBU and whatever else the Marine Highway has for contracts, do they allow for the high-speed ferries, or how do they accommodate for the commitment that you have that the subsidy is going to be less?
Through the chair, for Representative Mulder, the current contracts do not specifically address the kinds of operating concepts that we have in place. To give you an example, when the first ferry goes into operation in Sitka, we would want a commitment from that crew that they would, in fact, live in Sitka, because that's where the ship is going to be homeported, and that they would not bid out of that assignment, as they now may do, from any ship to another. Those kinds of work rules, we have not yet put in place with them. Another feature that we have put into our concept is a 40-hour work week, which is to say, to make these employees more like the rest of state employees, and pay them overtime if we, in fact, operate the ships overtime. So All of those kind of things have to be embodied in a contract. We would be doing that right now if we weren't manning up for the summer season. As soon as the summer season is finished, we'll get to the details of this. I believe that one of the reasons that the employees have, in fact, been supportive is that most of them see it as a benefit. The big benefit from their point of view is year-round employment.
Isn't it a danger, though, then, Captain, if we approve these contracts, but then you have to go back and renegotiate for something that they would say is arguably less?
Through the chair for Representative Mulder, I don't see that as a danger. There are at least two different ways to do this. We could write a completely new contract with them, which is really the way we prefer to do it, I think. Or they could be supplemental to the current contracts. And we write supplementals reasonably frequently, and we certainly did.
And we receive them.
Yes, sir. And those supplementals would be, in effect, different contracts because they have a very different operating scheme for the high-speed ferry. So, and they're anticipating that. We've already laid out the outlines of what these would be. I expect that they will negotiate as vigorously as they ever do, but there are some aspects to these contracts that we will insist upon, and I've outlined some of them.
Well, I still, you know, once you've already signed a contract, coming back and signing another one, or doing a supplemental where, you know, they seem to have you over a barrel, doesn't seem to me to be good management practice.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulder, I don't think they have us over a barrel. I don't think that, I mean, I would not conceive of it that way. The people who are going to be operating these ships will be those who find this to be an advantage to them, that is having regular employment, regular hours, being able to be with their family, all of the benefits that come from regular employment. I think we will trade that for the kind of wages and benefits that we expect. I think we have something to offer, which is not usually the case when we're talking about labor contracts.
Captain Dolph, you could get me a 10-year projected spreadsheet on the operating costs that you anticipate so that I can see how you feel this is going to diminish our subsidy over time. I have a tough time believing that. Anytime we're talking about bringing new ships on, the cost only goes up, and I directly refer back to the Malaspina, where somehow we were going to have a diminished cost, but that never happened.
Mr. Chair, for Representative Mulder, yes, sir, I'll be glad to do that. If I may make the observation that in the case of Malaspina, we do have reduced costs. The question is whether in a ship of a 40-year-old design, we can really achieve the kinds of benefits that we need to have to match the revenue that ship can earn. If I may just point out one thing. Every old ship requires enough crew members to go through every cabin, awake every passenger in the event of an emergency, and then to take those people to lifeboats, which are designed to sustain them on the surface of the water for days or weeks, as the case may be. That older concept of how to operate a ship and how to man it is what we need to get beyond. We need to get beyond that to a concept which not only delivers the passengers there in a single day, but provides us with rescue devices that are state-of-the-art, that are already in existence throughout the world, that we can take advantage of. And unless we move from the older 40-year-old ships that we have to the latest thing that's available, we're never going to overcome that cost problem. Even if we convert the ship to a day boat, so-called, the means of rescue aboard that ship are still 40-year-old means of rescue. They've had updates of various kinds, but they're basically 40 years old, and they, just like the services aboard the ship, are labor-intensive. We need to get away from those labor-intensive methods of doing business.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I dug back in the files, or I was sorting through my files, and I found something about the cost of maintaining a single lane mile. You still have that type of information? I remember you could take a stretch, a single lane now, a mile, and I think at that time it was $4,000 per lane mile. Of course, there's another lane there. Now we're talking about three lanes. We're talking about four lanes. I found that rather interesting that for a single lane mile that it was, you know, about $4,000. Is it what figures do they have now? About snow removal or the whole thing?
Representative Gusendorf, I don't have those on the tip of my tongue. I think they're a little more than $4,000 a mile. We'd be happy to provide them, but you're in the ballpark.
Yeah, what I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, is that a lot of people don't realize that we're talking about the Marina Highway, and I can go through the exercise that it doesn't cost much to maintain that highway. But a single lane mile in any hard highway that we have costs us over $4,000. Single lane. And so, you know, a lot of people don't think about that, what it takes to maintain a highway. All the equipment and all the maintenance and all the things that has to be done.
Senator Bundy?
Which is, of course, why we like to have motorists pay gas tax, because they do help pay to maintain that. People sitting in on the ferry tank drinking coffee aren't paying any gas tax.
Mr. Chairman, let's...
Let me
add this. Once again, and I use this before, name me one hard surfaced highway in this state that pays for half of its operations of that highway.
Through the taxes.
Representative Osterman, must you retort?
No. He knows where I'm coming from.
Okay, are there any further questions? Representative Davies?
When are we going to move the bill?
We will probably consider this along with other bond issues and capital appropriations sometime in the next week or two.
I'd like to make a final comment, if I could, Mr. Chairman. I again want to thank you for holding this hearing and listening to us. Secondly, I would like to say the controversy that has sort of centered around the ferries, some people sort of think that this is something that was just pulled out of the sky, and all of a sudden we're doing something to implement some idea that Bob Dahl had or I had or something. And this is furthest from the truth. The Southeast Plan, in fact, I have been soundly criticized in the other body for the length of time that I've taken with the Southeast Plan. It took us about 4 years to develop this Southeast Plan. Now, what we're talking about with the high-speed vessels is the implementation of that plan, because they're in there. So I think that, you know, when we look at the time we took, the public where it was involved and all of this, this is not a spur-of-the-moment idea that we've had. This is something where there's a lot of study gone into, there's a lot of work, and I would hope everybody would look at it from that viewpoint rather than just saying, you know, it's something that the Commissioner of DOT thought of last night. We spent 4 years at this, and one of these days we're going to have to change this ferry system. And this is our best shot after 4 years of work of changing it. Now we're in the implementation side, and to implement it, you've got to do the things that we've proposed, whether it be done quickly or whether it stretches out. The quicker you do them, the quicker you're going to reap the benefits of that plan. And again, thank you very much for allowing me to testify. I appreciate it.
Commissioner, while you're here, I want to ask on a different issue. I did talk to a member of your staff about the Old Richardson Highway project. I'm waiting for some information on that. Asked for why things are changing on the STIP list and projects get bumped. And part of the explanation was that new projects have come onto the list where DOT can do some work on a road and the municipality will take it over. And I'm somewhat sensitive to the fact that you're looking to divest yourself of maintenance responsibilities. But I think you have to be careful of how long you let that go on, and if it continues to bump other projects that are somewhat safety-related in a road that is not going to be taken over by a municipality because it's a highway. You know, I don't think you should continue to just allow those projects to come in, bump everything else down the line forever and ever. Now, it wouldn't be forever, but I would hope that that system that allows those projects to come from nowhere and vault to the head of the list would only allow a certain amount every year or something so that everybody else is not left waiting in line.
Mr. Chairman, that's not the only reason that some of them got bumped. We are up to about $30 million of our projects that are pure maintenance. And we're doing any project where we can reduce our maintenance costs. We're really throwing out as quickly as we can, and a lot of that is patching and work that we're doing on the Glen, the parks, and all of this. So I think that's impacting it too. But you're very right. We've got to be very careful that we don't do that, and I'll watch it.
Well, Representative Moses is been at me a couple times. He said, "Well, you want an idea of something the state shouldn't be doing? They shouldn't be maintaining some of those driveways, as he calls them, in Mat-Su. So rather than put a whole lot of money into them to entice them to take them over, perhaps we should just stop maintaining them." With that, we'll wrap up the hearing for today.